I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to explore the growing interest in food as medicine. We're going to look at ways that what we eat may cure or at least alleviate what ails us. My guests are Lisa Harris of Eskenazi Health, Nick Fenning of Meals on Wheels of Central Indiana, and WFYI's own Lee Dinoon, who is working on a documentary on this subject. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the food as medicine movement. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guests today are Lisa Harris. She is the CEO of Eskenazi Health, a returning guest, a veteran of the program. Nick Fenning of Meals on Wheels of Central Indiana. And WFYI's own Lee Dinoon, who's working on a documentary on this very subject. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So, Lee, I'll start with you. We probably ought to just talk with give people a baseline. When we talk about food as medicine, what are we talking about?
So, a lot of the chronic diseases we have, you know, our number one chronic disease, the thing that kills more Hoosiers and more Americans than anything, is heart disease. And surprisingly, by what you eat, it plays a humongous impact on the development of heart disease. And so it's just, we want to let people know that what they eat, what they consume, can play a major role in their health. So Dr. Harris probably can.
Okay, so
this.
Yeah, and I noticed her head was bobbing up and down while you were talking there. So we'll cue
in
her next. Yes, yes, that's what I was saying. It would have been going side to side if you were disagreeing.
Well, first, I like the way you've. It's interesting you framed this as the movement, mm-hmm. and I want to point out that this movement dates to the time of Hippocrates. There's mm-hmm. actually a quote: "Hippocrates, let food be thy medicine, and medicine be thy food." So in
so
recognizing
it's recent,
this,
then,
right? Yeah, it's recent. Yeah, yeah, but we're getting serious about it now, which is what's okay, so exciting. Yeah. And as Lee said, you know, it there isn't anything that's more foundational to health than good nutrition. We know that 80% of the chronic disease that burdens individuals and our community and our nation can be prevented, better managed, and actually reversed by the choices we make, and that has to do in large part with food, with physical activity, with, you know, social connection. There are multiple things that play into it. Nothing more important than nutrition. And this is actually new, even since the time it's been a long time since I was in medical school, truth be told. But at that point, we thought more in terms of prevention.
Between Hippocrates and
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Somewhere yeah. in between there. But we've always recognized that there's a role for prevention. What's so exciting now is that we can reverse diabetes. We can reverse heart disease. Obviously, it's a little harder to reverse than to prevent in the first place, but it can be done, and it is being done. And we are excited that as a profession, and especially as a profession generally, and especially with as a community locally, that there's a lot of momentum building behind this notion of you know, really getting back to basics.
So give me some examples, if you would. I'll stay with you for a moment, Dr. Harris. You know, when we say we can cure diabetes or we can cure heart disease, two that are of interest to a man of a certain mm-hmm. vintage here. So How would we go about that? How does this work?
It's more simple than you might imagine. I'll start with some data. So the Mediterranean diet, this is a diet that is largely comprised of vegetables, fruits, beans, nuts, olive oil, fish. For those who consume alcohol, maybe a little red wine mixed in, can actually reduce the risk of coronary artery disease by 30%. 30%. There isn't any drug or procedure that we have in our armamentarium and that it comes anywhere close to that. The diabetes prevention program, which is basically low-fat diet and 30 minutes of exercise a day, can reduce the risk of diabetes in high-risk individuals by 60%. And so you asked, like, what are some of the specific things? It's really easier, I think, than a lot of people think. A focus on a plant-based diet doesn't mean we all have to be vegetarians or vegans, but a diet that is mostly about plants and mostly about real food as opposed to processed food that incorporates an array of colors and nutrients is very high in fiber is really the essence of what we're talking about. And I think, some people need that very prescriptive diet to get, started. So some people want to, have the menus for everything they need to eat, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, all carefully weighed. That's okay, but it's not necessary. Some people need that regimentation to get a start. But it's really much simpler than that. It's really focusing on eating real food, eating mostly plants, and eating not too much. And for those who are familiar with this work, they'll recognize those as the words of Michael Pollan, his book Food Rules, a very small book. You can put it in your pocket. It's very common sense. Mm-hmm. But it's easier, I think, than we all might imagine.
Nick, I would imagine this has particular relevance for Meals on Wheels, since a lot of the folks that you serve are incapacitated in some way, so they have some health challenges, and that means that making sure that they get the right food is really important.
Yes, so actually 76% of our clients need specific dietary orders. All of our clients require a prescription from their doctor for their diet order, along with nutrition education. With their that comprises our medically tailored meals that we serve. 43% of our clients have multiple chronic diseases, and so we're really, really treating multiple things at one time with this diet, and. Because of our food comes from local hospitals, they can cater to those needs. Of course, one of them is Eskenazi Health, and they provide our meal delivery Monday through Friday, as well as a frozen meal option. And those include no preservatives, lots of vegetables, 15 different meal options, and they're all of our, especially those frozen meals are really exciting. For this food is medicine.
I would say also that now over 40% of the food we serve through Meals on Wheels and through our hospital is from Indiana farmers and producers. So there's another piece of that in terms of
is locally grown. So if you're just joining us, we are talking about the Food as Medicine movement on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So, Lee, tell me about the documentary. I mean, what?
So I just recently got the green light. I'm really excited.
Okay.
I've been in talking with Dr. Harris for over a year about food as medicine. And, I was exposed a few years ago to a story about an Iowa doctor who had MS. Mm-hmm. And she her disease progressed really rapidly. And so she found herself at home, basically in a reclining wheelchair or in bed because she couldn't work anymore. And so she started doing research about, what clinical studies had been done on animals to show what nutrients seemed to help people with MS. And so she first went on vitamins to try to help her MS and, you know, went back to her doctor and said, I don't think this is helping, so I'm going to stop. And as soon as she stopped her, the disease reared up again and she got worse. And then she decided that she was going to try using real food to get those specific nutrients into her diet. And so she made an amazing recovery, bounced back from MS, which, what's amazing about food is medicine is that it doesn't just help diabetes and heart disease. There's new research now into Alzheimer's. They're showing that in some cases they can reverse some of the problems with Alzheimer's and MS. And so it's just it's an amazing simple thing.
What sort of foods did she eat to?
So mostly plant-based.
Okay.
Her name's Dr. Terry Walls. Okay. And so she found that some different meats were necessary for her diet. It's a lot of people are resistant to changing their diet. It's a very cultural thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you hear eat more fruits and vegetables and there's resistance.
Well, that also echoes your mother from second grade or whatever.
But amazingly, in the last several years, we've seen an increase in what's in the produce aisle at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Avocados. A lot of people are eating guacamole now. They're eating hummus. And these are things that are, plant-based foods that we didn't used to eat. And so I think there is the opportunity, if people open their minds, that they can overcome that resistance. I'm hoping to tell stories about people in Indiana and organizations and hospitals in Indiana that are on the forefront. And there's a woman on the Far East Side who had a heart attack at 43. Mm-hmm. And she found that through her own research that if she changed her diet to a plant-based diet, that she could reverse heart disease. And so she, even though she had, been a person who enjoyed deep fried foods, she now has become basically a vegan to reverse her heart disease because she doesn't want to be on drugs for the rest of her life. So
you're leaning in, Dr. Harris. Yeah.
We actually have some data to support these great individual stories. And we decided at Eskenazi that if we were going to be serious about this, that we wanted to really be a health system that truly improved the health of its community, starting with itself, knowing that we can't most effectively care for others until we're competent at caring for ourselves. So we worked hard to improve the quality of the food that we serve through our retail areas, where we serve our staff, visitors, people coming from really now across campus in Indianapolis. And we have demonstrated that by offering plant-based foods, making them taste good, and offering them at a price that people can afford, we are eating 45% more fruits and vegetables, 16% less meat, and 38% less sodium. And at the same time, we're serving about four to five times more people than. So I think that's really hopeful data that flies in the face of something. We can get really caught up in how bad our health statistics are and how hard some of this change is. And so I think it's helpful to see in a group of individuals who are really a microcosm of the population we serve, that when we do those things and we nudge people in the right direction, we have multiple ways to sort of nudge people to help to make the good choices. They will do that. And I think that's another thing that people who are burdened with chronic illness can think, it's too late. This is my genes. Everybody in my family has heart disease. Everybody has diabetes. We
and
know
those
now,
factors are somewhat in play.
But not nearly to the extent that you would think. We have a lot of information now that shows that our genes are not our destiny. Our choices are. And the way that the choices we make, the food we eat, the level of activity actually can upregulate some genes and downregulate others. So we are not stuck with our inherited genetic profile.
We are talking about the food as medicine movement here on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Lisa Harris. She is the CEO of Eskenazi Health, Nick Fenning of Meals on Wheels of Central Indiana, and WFYI's own Lee Dineen, who is working on a documentary on this very subject. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the food as medicine movement on No Limits today. My guests are Lisa Harris. She is CEO of Eskenazi Health, Nick Fenning of Meals on Wheels of Central Indiana, and our own Lee Dineen of WFYI, who is working on a documentary on this very subject. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what Beverly has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Beverly, you're on the air.
Hello. I have a few questions. For someone like my mother, she might have a question as to, number one, do the meals taste good, the meals on wheels? Will they taste good? Will they be hot, or can they be made hot? If they should be, that's my first two questions.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, why don't we limit it to two so other people have a chance here, Beverly? But what I would encourage everyone to do, though, is this conversation often continues after we go off the air.
Yeah.
So join us on Facebook, post your questions there, and I'm looking across at my three guests here and saying, will you continue the conversation on Facebook even after, if we run out of time during the hour?
Absolutely.
They're all saying yes. So, Beverly, please join us there, and I'll get an answer to your first two questions from Nick. Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Beverly. So we deliver Monday through Friday, one hot and one cold meal to our clients between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. by our faithful crew of 1,600 volunteers. And we always try our best to accommodate people's tastes and preferences. And the most important thing is that we get the diet order in there that is prescribed to them by their physician. I think the meals are very good, and there's also that daily check-in with the client, with the volunteer. So it's some days the only person that they see every day, and just that wellness check as well.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Michelle. And again, if you want to join the conversation via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Michelle writes, "Dear John and guests, I work for the Garfield Park Farmers Market here in Indianapolis. Indianapolis healthcare providers are interested in partnering with farmers markets to create produce prescriptions, but these providers are having trouble working through the logistics of the program. Can you speak to healthcare food prescription programs that are maybe working in other parts of the country? How can Indianapolis providers get liftoff on this idea?" Lisa, I think that one is aimed at you. So.
Well, I'm happy to be able to say that we have a great example right here in our community. And this is at our PCAR Health Center on North Michigan, where in partnership, this is a partnership between Eskenazi Health, Gleaners Food Bank, Dow Agro, the Crooked Creek community, and St. Luke's United Methodist Church. And we have a very active food pantry that really is almost, I think some would say this, it's small, but has all the elements of a full-service grocery store. And now that our physicians practicing at that site know that they have something they can do, they are actively screening all patients presenting for care for food insecurity. And when they find a food insecure individual or family, they write the prescription for food that is filled at the pantry by filling bags of food. So there, that's just one example. There really are examples all over the country. And I think that, I think having that that demonstration of a prescription. We write prescriptions for physical activity as well. Mm. We can, if we have time, we can talk about the lifestyle medicine clinic that we have originated within Eskenazi Health, where everything is about helping people make the right choices and those behavioral changes. And we talk in terms of a prescription for exercise and a prescription for food that has all the elements of the prescriptions we write for medications.
Nick.
So we have we're very proud to have our second annual Food is Medicine Symposium happening this Thursday. If you'd like more info on that, you can email info@mealsonwheelsindy.org. And we're gathering healthcare professionals and the leaders in the healthcare fields together to talk about food as medicine. We're in the works of doing an Indiana Food as Medicine state plan. So the hope of that is that we all come together and we have those inroads built so everybody can be connected through the food as medicine approach.
Got a comment from a listener named Jim via Facebook. And if you want to join this conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Jim writes, had an experience in a hospital where the menu was mostly sugar, carbs, and meat, and practically nothing for a plant-based diet. So I'm going to take the liberty and flip that around and make it a question. At some level, why did it take, as Dr. Harris pointed out at the top of the show, this is not exactly a new idea. It's been around for a long time. Why has it taken as long to either gain momentum or overcome resistance? Because it's often struck me, I'm diabetic, and the instruction often that you would get, not just from your doctor, but in the culture and all of that, is okay, it's a thou shalt not approach. You shouldn't have creme brulee or anything like that. It was less about, okay, this is what you should have. That's a change of mindset. I want to hear everybody's thoughts on that. I'll start with Lisa, though.
This is a great question, and I would say that the food that we have traditionally seen in hospitals and other settings is simply a reflection of our overall diet. And as we have worked to increase the nutritional value of the food that we serve, and we have made enormous progress in that regard, something that we've had to be mindful of is individual preferences. And, being in the hospital is a time of stress. And so if people are used to comfort food, when do you need comfort more than when you're in a hospital environment? And so we've needed to be thoughtful and sensitive to that and work to take incremental steps. Some would say, zealots would say that hospitals have no business serving meat. I could see the value in that argument. And I can also see that we need to, take a multitude of perspectives into play and, again, make the changes, the gradual changes that help people, again, provide food that tastes good, that is something that people gravitate toward as opposed to something they feel forced to eat. So a large number of organizations outsource food services, and that creates less opportunity to make some of these changes. We had the benefit of being the case that since the time of City Hospital in the mid-1800s, we've always cooked our own food. Mm-hmm. So that gives us the latitude. And I'll tell you, we're cooking more and more and more and more of what we serve from scratch now.
Nick.
I can speak on, you know, the history of Meals on Wheels and how it's changed over the years. We've been doing serving meals since 1971. And over time, we've just increased our access to other to more and more clients, including other chronic diseases. We believe that, you know, everybody has the right to the same access to healthy food for the proper for, you know, the proper food for their chronic diseases. And in a couple years ago, we joined the Food as Medicine Coalition. And we've been expanding to other chronic diseases and projects like the new one with the low-income HIV clients around the whole state. So we've just been expanding that based, you know, on our core mission from the beginning, which was feeding the correct food to whoever needs it.
Lee, I imagine this is somewhat the hook for your story, too, right?
Well, you know, part of what's happened, too, is that in medical schools, nutrition, there are very few nutrition classes. Mm-hmm. So doctors, you know, come out of medical school feeling that they have an arsenal of ways to treat diseases, but they don't have a very good knowledge of nutrition. And so it's been, you know, difficult for patients to get solid information from their physicians. And thankfully, that is something that's changing now. And Dr. Harris mentioned their new lifestyle medicine clinic, which focuses on nutrition and exercise. So the doctors are now learning about many of the doctors at Eskenazi are being trained to know more about nutrition.
Lisa was doing a little happy dance when you were mentioning that.
You know, I had a physician for several years, and I'm the type of person if I can make changes in my life so that I don't have to go on a prescription, that's what I want to do. And so I asked her multiple times about, you know, are there supplements I should be taking? Are there different foods I should be eating? And she didn't have good answers for me. And so I, you know, had to seek out a different physician. And so, it, you know, my mom passed away from dementia. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very concerned about my brain health. And so that was what was driving those questions for me. And you know, still drives those questions for me. And so that's kind of how I got hooked into you know, studying this. And I'm very passionate about letting people know that they can make changes in their diets and their lives and feel better and be well.
Lisa, I'm going to give you a crack. We've got a lot of calls and all of that coming in.
Just one example of something where I think the evidence that we're gathering, that we're generating with our partnership with Meals on Wheels, I think will help mainstream some of this for health systems in general. And just try to get this out there as quickly as possible. We basically studied patients who were admitted with heart failure. And often heart failure is because of too much sodium, and you get too much sodium in your diet. Someone with heart failure can be tipped over the edge with a ham sandwich. That's kind of how that goes. Mm-hmm. So we looked at patients who were in the hospital with heart failure, and we partnered with Meals on Wheels to send them home with a free therapeutic diet, the kind of diet that Nick was talking about that is prescribed. So this was a low-sodium diet, and, you know, so that once they were home, they continued to get the same kind of diet that they were getting in the hospital. And in that group, we reduced our readmission rate to 4.8%. Now, the average across the country is still, you know, in the high teens, low 20s. So that's significant. And that's the kind of thing that gets the attention of health systems in general, because health hospitals aren't paid for a readmission. So that's another reason to help individuals broadly appreciate the importance. There's a financial incentive in addition to just the general health of individuals.
We are talking about the Food as Medicine movement. If you want to join the conversation, please send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or do what Janet has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Janet, you are on the air.
Hi. My question is, what diet do you recommend for osteoporosis?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Now, I'll do this so you don't have to, Lisa. You're obviously going to be reluctant to prescribe, to practice medicine over the air here. Are there general things that we could help Janet with, is there a way we could follow up afterwards?
Obviously, calcium and vitamin D are cornerstones of building strong bones. So, and I'd be happy to help get her much more information. But that would be just a very initial basic advice.
I've gotten an email from a listener who wishes to remain anonymous and makes a point here that I think we need to include in the conversation. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. This listener writes, I applaud the healthy eating movement. Many have and will benefit and feel empowered by learning new healthy behaviors and by the extinction of food deserts. Please take care not to moralize eating. Self-care is good, but we need to not foster guilt in those who do get sick, not fat shame and judge, not become self-centered, focusing on our own diets at the expense of the greater good, which is what No Limit stands for. And not ignore environmental degradation, the biggest health threat of all. As a former anorexic, I know too well the lure of what can become an unhealthy superstition about the safety of correct eating and the navel-gazing aspect of our anorexia and orthorexia. Your panel is so compassionate. I love your community-spirited angle. We must not lose sight of our common mortality and reach for compassionate interaction. Thanks for doing your part. So, I don't think anyone here have anything to say other than amen.
Exactly. Hear, hear. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Janet.
So we also have a Facebook message from a listener named Whitney. And again, on Facebook, we can be found at No Limits, WFYI. Whitney writes, people are talking about vitamins and supplements all the time these days, but a study was just published about how it is all rubbish. Is it important to complement a healthy diet with vitamins, or is it all marketing? And no one is making eye contact with me right now. I could be back in the classroom asking a tough question. I'll throw that one to Nick.
Well, Meals on Wheels, we don't deal with vitamins. We deal with food. So we would refer them back to their physician or dietitian for that. Or consult with our dietitian about if somebody has specific needs or we have a question about that.
We also have gotten an email from our regular listener, Marion, that makes reference to, I think, a point you were making earlier, Dr. Harris. Again, the email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Most people recognize that we have a moral obligation to other animals. If animals have a moral value and we know consumption of animals and their products is not necessary for a healthy diet, how do we justify the unnecessary suffering inflicted on animals, including fish, at all, especially given the dire consequences of factory farming animals? If you agree that we have a moral obligation to animals, doesn't that ethically commit you to promote a plants-only or vegan diet? Animal agriculture is doing more harm than good in Indiana. Lisa, I'll give you.
Oh, I would have looked at you during that. I think we have to take this question in the context of the earlier comment and maintain broad awareness. My personal habits are aligned with, I think, these sentiments. Mm-hmm. And I think, though, that we have to recognize the breadth of perspectives, of cultural preferences, of needs, and again, move in a way that is as inclusive as it can be. I think the more narrow, if we get too narrow in our views, and then we risk actually excluding some of the very folks who we would like to eventually entice along a path that is better for them, better for the planet, better for all of us.
We are talking about the Food is Medicine movement with my guest Lisa Harris of Eskenazi Health, Nick Fenning of Meals on Wheels of Central Indiana, and our own Lee DeNoon. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please Stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the food as medicine movement. Here on No Limits today, my guests are Lisa Harris. She is CEO of Eskenazi Health, Nick Fenning of Meals on Wheels of Central Indiana, and WFYI's own Lee Dinoon, who is working on a documentary on this very subject. If you want to join the conversation, please send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Charisse, I hope I pronounced that right, has done, and give us a call at 866-476-3881. You are on the air.
Yes, is that me?
That is you. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
My name is Cherie.
Cherie, no, okay.
Yeah.
So we go silent. Thank you. All right, okay. What's your question?
I don't have a question. I just wanted to comment that over the years, I've always been a regular eater where I ate out a lot, and I ate a lot of meat. I ate a lot of fast food. I ate a lot of packaged food. I've always been in fairly good health, but I started getting into situations where I had high blood pressure and a few minor kind of things like that. I wouldn't say they were life-threatening at that point, but I'm also, I've done a lot of, I have a lot of education, and because of that, I am a big researcher into a lot of things. So I started researching into food and health and everything, and I would just say probably after about 7 years of doing that, I didn't look into plant-based food or diets, but I came to the conclusion that that is exactly what is the best thing for us, including a lot of garlic and turmeric and ginger and a lot of herbs that are out there. And almost getting to my retirement age and on absolutely no medication. My BMI is completely normal. And my husband's too. He came along on this journey with me reluctantly at first, but now he's very happy. And along the way, I've learned about constrictive calories. And I didn't learn about it because I was looking for it. I found out about it because I realized that's what we're doing. And I was kind of shocked because I went to an event a couple of weeks ago called the Veg Fest, which I thought, you know, how many people are going to be going to this? And I got there and could hardly walk around. And I thought, you know, that that was great. And so when I heard today, I listen to NPR whenever I can. When I heard today you were going to be talking about the health benefits and everything, I thought, of a plant-based diet, I thought, oh my gosh, I have to listen to this, which I have been. I started up with some meal delivery services a few years ago, thinking the first ones I were on were really healthy. Well, now I'm on one that's completely plant-based, but I don't get it every week, and just in my normal cooking.
Cherie, I want to jump in here because you've triggered all of my guests here are nodding their heads. So I want to give them a chance to respond. But thank you very much for calling and sharing your experience.
Okay,
thank you very much for calling. So I mean that's also got to be good news for someone who does what you do, Nick. Is that you know, that there is a receptivity to healthier food choices and that they want them delivered.
Yeah, so our clients are very thankful for what they receive. Many of them are low income, so this is life-saving food for all of our clients, including those that are lacking other resources. The caller was talking about medicine. Well, sometimes people are on life-saving medicine, and they need that nutrition to go along with that medicine to improve the adherence to the medication, the ability for it to do its job in their bodies. And so our food is goes hand in hand with the medicine that they do have to be on, with the hope that as well it helps control those chronic diseases and improves them if possible.
Gotten an email from a listener named Ben. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Ben writes, have your guests done any research on the average prices of produce in Indiana and how those prices compare against other states' averages? Certainly lowering the price of produce would help. We already throw away one-third of our country's entire stock of produce, much of which is thrown out simply because it doesn't meet consumer demands for the best-looking produce. I assume that consumer demands factor into why produce isn't more affordable. Are there programs to make less than perfect produce available to the public at a more affordable price? Lisa.
I have a couple of thoughts about this. We're getting at whether eating well is something that's accessible to everyone. And I think there is this unfortunate reality that food insecurity and obesity often go hand in hand because of food deserts and the access to calorically dense but nutritionally empty food. And so we are concerned that a big part of that is the price. And I think that plays a role, maybe not as big a role as many might think, and it's obviously a very complex issue. But when we look at a couple things related to price, so there was a study that Robert Wood Johnson did of established farmers markets in urban neighborhoods. So again, this is locally grown produce, and found that and again in urban inner city neighborhoods, found that only 17% of individuals shopping cited price as a barrier to shopping at a local market. I think especially low-income individuals know value and know the value of good produce versus not good produce. Another angle to take this from, and here Seth Grant, who actually manages all of our efforts toward growing to buying food more of our food locally, is actually telling me that in general we're finding that it's cost less. And some of that might be counterintuitive. Some of it, if you start to think about it, when you reduce the cost of transportation,
distribution,
that's one thing. Another is, and this is why we have really worked hard to see how much of our food we can source locally, and that is that we know that as a large organization, we need a reliable supply of food. We need 1,000 pounds of potatoes a week, and farmers need a reliable demand. And if we can work out that supply-demand loop and demonstrate what that looks like, we can reduce the price because farmers have to build in the cost of the waste. If they, I do most of my food shopping at farmers markets, and I am not usually the first one there in the morning. When I get there, there's still plenty of fresh produce that they have brought in and that they're going to carry home. And so I think that part of, again, demonstrating a commitment to purchasing a high volume and getting others to do the same creates that reliable market for our own produce. And I read something that was stunning that actually here we are, we grow a lot of food here. We grow great food here. And yet 95% of what we eat here comes from elsewhere.
Yeah, apparently this conversation is making people hungry because someone apparently sent us a picture of her lunch, and apparently it looks good. It's arugula, polenta, and pine nuts. So
what's her address?
We're all coming over afterwards, yes. We have a Facebook message from a listener named Nicholas, and again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Nicholas says, I've been hearing a lot about veganism being beneficial to your health. Can you talk about some of the specific health effects of veganism, and what do you think can be done to promote these healthy diets in our school systems? Well, everybody's kind of pointing at you, Lisa.
Well, I ought to say there is a very definitive, what we in medicine would call a dose response curve, mm-hmm. that looks at the extent to which you are focusing on plants and minimizing animal proteins. And there's no question that the vegans live the longest. Mm-hmm. Vegetarians, not quite as long. Pescatarians, not quite as long as them. And people on what we call the standard American diet, mm-hmm. you know, definitely have shorter lifespans related to diet and the consequences of, you know, choices. And I mean, it's a very complex. It's really not a quick answer mm-hmm. in terms of these specifics of animal proteins. There's the nature of animal versus plant-based protein on its own. Then there is how we raise the majority of animals that are raised for consumption. That includes, you know, hormones and antibiotics and processing and all sorts of other things that come together to reduce the benefit and actually create harm. There was a piece that just came out, and I'm still delving into the original mm-hmm. research. I read it in the New York Times over the weekend that actually drew a link to some specific additives in food that to prolong shelf life that increase the risk of Clostridium difficile mm-hmm. infection in hospital. That's a big deal. Those are serious illnesses. People die of those illnesses, and there is a direct link there that's obviously of high relevance to healthcare because people get those infections often when they're in the hospital or they're on prolonged courses of antibiotics. So there is that's a very complex question. There's a lot of general information, and then we're now targeting the specific food additives that create the danger. This gets to something that if I was taught this in medical school, I didn't remember it. The power of the microbiome, which is mm-hmm. all the bacteria in our gut, that turns out to be the most important component of our immune system. This is something that mm-hmm. I think we've certainly appreciate much better now than we did, 30 years ago. But that gets down to some of the on the more biologic basis of what's happening. That's actually penetrating our mucosal barrier and allowing things that are not that we are better off not having in our systems gain entry.
Two yes, quick Lee. Things.
Sure.
Community gardens are becoming more popular in the city and are a way for people to get fruits and vegetables at a reduced rate. And then Big Green is a nonprofit organization. It used to be the Kitchen Community. It's a Kimball Musk organization. They are putting in 100 gardens at Indianapolis Public Schools so that kids, can actually walk out on their recess and actually help take part in growing fruits and vegetables. So they are exposed to where food actually comes from instead of getting it from some plastic container at the store. They're actually, pulling carrots out of the ground. And so for the caller who wanted to know about how we get more fruits and vegetables mm. into schools, that's
that
one.
Would be one mm-hmm. way. Betty, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hello. What's your question?
Well, my question was just brought up by one of your emailers about the nutrition for children in school, and wouldn't it be better to start younger than trying to change habits? Wouldn't it be better to create better habits to begin with? I have two grandchildren in school, in public school, and even though there are federal guidelines, the people who provide the food are trying to make a profit. Since they're not provided by the state any longer, but by contractors who come in, they override the federal government by making ridiculous changes, such as a tomato sauce being a vegetable, tomato sauce being laden with sugar. Mm-hmm. That's considered a vegetable. So anyway, that's my comment, and I'm very passionate about that. I was glad to hear the comment about planting the gardens at the schools. That's fabulous. But That's not going to be at all schools.
Okay.
I think that nutrition in
well, let me take
to
let
the
me
children in school are just it's sad.
Betty, we're getting close on time, and I do want to give people a chance to respond to your points here. So thank you very much for the call and
thank you
and for your comment. Certainly. So how much of this is also, and it refers back to kind of a question we were talking about earlier, changing mindsets here about getting people to see different possibilities. Nick.
Well, let me speak a little about one of the grant projects we've just started, which is through the Ryan White federal funding. We're serving people living with HIV around the whole state. And again, the access to medically tailored meals has never been there before through the Ryan White funding. So we're hoping to get this nutrition education along with their medically tailored meals to change those lifestyles over time and improve their health and, you know, show those evidence-based research that this works, not only for future funding, but, you know, most importantly for the clients that we serve, that they see the value in what they're getting from us. And hopefully, in you know, improving their health down the road.
I want to squeeze in one more question from a listener. Kristen reached out to us via Facebook and says, it is my hope that we will see more evidence-based research on the importance of food to health. I am concerned that medicine is a business and no one is willing to foot the bill on beautiful food, such as a study on such as a study on broccolini. Can you comment? Lisa,
I would say I have the same hope, and I see some of that hope being realized. I think that there is a lot of information that and a lot of specific studies that are out there now, and I think that's what is that this momentum is building. And I you know belong to the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. The enrollment in that that professional organization has increased 47% over the last year among practicing and among healthcare professionals. That says that we're paying attention to this and we're starting to see some real impact.
So, Lee, real quickly, I want to ask as we get when are we going to when will the documentary be before us?
That's a very good question, John. I just got the green light a few weeks ago to move forward. So we are fundraising. So, you know, that has to happen before we can actually go out and interview folks. So I'm wishing that anybody that wants to see this come to fruition, please let me know.
Okay, well, that will probably have to be the last word. I know we could talk a lot more about this, and I would encourage everyone to do so. Remind everyone that this conversation can and will continue on our Facebook page. I'd like to thank my guests, Lisa Harris, Nick Fenning, and Lee Dineen, for what has been a really lively conversation. Thank our listeners for some great questions. I'd like to welcome everybody back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about how communities should respond to gun violence. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.